Hey everyone, it's Steve-O from Not Another Bee Horrorcast, and you're listening to another great production on the 4Eye Radio Network. For more great shows, check out www.4eyeradio.com.
Walloping web snappers! My spider sense is tingling.
My spider sense is picking up trouble.
Something's turning my spider sense on.
My spider sense
is tingling.
Anybody else's spider sense tingling?
Welcome to Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast where we dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made. I'm Derek.
And I'm Doug.
And is your spider sense tingling?
Yeah, that or my body's been possessed by a man made of photons. Not sure.
Okay. To listen to this show, find us on 4EyedRadio.com and wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is brought to you by Revenge Lover Designs, illustration and design that fit your personality. For samples and inquiries, visit RevengeLover.com. And we'd just like to, of course, take a quick moment to thank our spectacular patrons, Bo, Carl, Eric, Katie, Jason, and David.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, ready to talk some Iron Man?
Iron Man, because I needed another name to fuck me up on this particular series.
My God, you know, I didn't even think about that. Iron Fist, Power Man, Iron Man, jeez, guys.
Just hopefully the notes are all in order, because I'm going to struggle.
Who cares? It's going to happen. It's fine. It's fine. Just call him Mr. Stark.
Mr. Stark.
It's very funny watching this episode in a post-MCU world.
It is.
Really funny it in is. Like a few ways.
Yeah.
Very fascinating. There's going to be some stuff to talk about. So
yeah.
Yeah. If you want to watch along with us, of course, this show's available to watch on Disney Plus. We are talking about Ultimate Spider-Man Season 1, Episode 5, entitled Flight of the Iron Spider.
Awesome.
Hey, kid. I like your style. Wardrobe notwithstanding. How about you visit the plant on Saturday? Maybe I can help you out. Anyway, if you really want to kick up your game, I had an hour to kill, so I came up with this.
Whoa.
You want to take it out for a spin?
Yes.
Don't worry. Everything's cool. See, I'm operating on a new level. You don't quote comprehend.
Face it, Junior Stark. In that suit, you stink.
You can't control it. Clearly, it sustained some damage.
Are you kidding? He never laid a glove on me.
He didn't have to. You're your own worst enemy in that thing.
You guys just don't get it, do you? Tony Stark built this for me.
Yeah, well, you sure picked him over us in a hurry, didn't you? Hey, why not be his sidekick from now on and quit messing with our gig? We don't need you.
You're serious?
Seems that way.
You know, Stark is who he is because he followed his own path. Are you certain you're following yours?
The synopsis per IMDb is, when Spider-Man meets his idol, Iron Man, he receives a specialized gift. The Iron Spider suit. However, Spider-Man experiences difficulty learning how to use the suit and begins to neglect his teammates. Oh no. Meanwhile, the heroes battle the Living Laser, who takes advantage of Spider-Man's lack of experience using the new suit. Original air date was April 22nd, 2012. This was written by Man of Action, who we talked very extensively about on our number 175 episode, Doomed. And it was directed by Philip Pignotti, who we've talked about a few times already. So familiar people doing this one.
Yeah. Obviously, we're going to talk about an Iron Man here. So this is Iron Man Tony Stark, voiced by Adrian Pasdar. We mentioned him briefly. I know we've talked about him because we've talked about Tony Starks before in the animated realm. He was the voice of Tony Stark for a while before Mick Wingert became the go-to. Mick Wingert directly took over like the Iron Man role from Adrian Pasdar in like this universe of animated series. I learned who Adrian Pasdar was from him playing Nathan Petrelli on Heroes. That was like my first exposure to him. But he's done plenty of stuff prior to that. He was Chipper in Top Gun. He led in Fox's Profit and NBC's Mysterious Ways. He recurred and guested on Judging Amy and Desperate Housewives, respectively. So he was doing plenty of TV before Heroes. I just didn't watch any of those things.
Yeah, no, same. I think the first time I ever saw him was on Heroes.
Since this show, he's done a ton of stuff, and it ends up being a lot more like nerdy stuff, but I bet you that's just the case for like everybody at this point. So he's voiced Hugo Strange in Young Justice. He portrayed Graviton in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Morgan Edge in Supergirl, and plenty more. He's done all kinds of stuff.
I don't know if he was in Young Justice while I was watching it, but like his voice does make a good Hugo Strange. I like that. I like that casting choice a lot. You know what I also like is that he's not doing a Robert Downey Jr. impression, and I think he's a really good Iron Man.
I know.
Against Mick Wingert, I feel, always feel bad. I don't want to be like trashing the guy, but like every time. I mean, hearing this, I'm just sort of like, yeah, this is a fucking performance, like not an impression, and it's actually good.
Well, and we talked about this a little bit with this show's Nick Fury. Mick Wingert does a great job doing an impression of RDJ. It's just that like you don't have to do that to be a successful Tony Stark. So it's not that we're trashing his ability or anything. He's great at what he does. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, cartoons, you can do more than just mimic the MCU.
Yeah, and I think the performance that Adrian Pasdar gives as this Tony Stark is like, I don't know, it has a different energy for sure, but in a way that like I think like Robert Downey Jr. was bringing Robert Downey Jr. to it, and I think Adrian Pasdar is playing like versions of Iron, like just playing a version of Iron Man from the comics, and I think is I don't know, it's like Robert Downey Jr. has particular affects and a particular sort of like,
it's a very specific like cadence to the way that he delivers lines.
The cadence, and there's like this weird like sort of election, it's like, is it I don't want to say nervous energy because he's like confident, but like
there is a
zippiness to him, you know. And I feel like before he was in the role, I feel like Tony Stark was like smooth and suave in a way, and that's what Adrian Pasdar is playing, and since then it's only post Robert Downey Jr. that it's sort of gone in another direction.
They added, the MCU injected, or I should say Robert Downey Jr., but the MCU certainly played and built on this. They added a certain like neuroses or like a neurosis to Iron Man and Tony Stark that works really well in that universe based on like what the story is. But that doesn't have to be Tony Stark moving forward in every iteration. It wasn't for a long time.
So it's nice to have a little bit of a throwback even while the MCU was going on at this time. For sure.
Yeah, I really like him as Iron Man. And I really want to, I mean, I want to watch his cartoons from when he was Iron Man like entirely, but I really want to watch like a few episodes of him in that show and then watch like the first episode or two where Mick Wingert takes over, and then go back to the thing that we covered with Mick Wingert doing it outside of that context. I think it'd be really interesting to see if there was a more gradual change, or if just in that show, suddenly he sounds like Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, we could do just a little like a spider bite or something that's just like the evolution of Iron Man in the sort of MCU Marvel world.
You totally could,
seeing how they sort of adopted that and stuff could be interesting.
Maybe if we get curious enough over time, that'll be a spider bite in the future, you guys. Or if that sounds really interesting to people, just let us know. We'll do it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we also get this character named the Living Laser. This is the only thing I know him from. I don't remember him from the little bit of Iron Man cartoon I watched, but he apparently is an Iron Man villain. So we get him. He's voiced by Keith Sarabajka, and he was actually one of Pasdar's co-stars on Profit. They both were main cast members on Profit, which is a fun coincidence, ? But prior to that, he was a regular cast member on the original Equalizer series in the 80s. I think that was kind of like his breakout acting role. He's guested on tons of popular TV series. This is one of those guys that like I realized I recognized him, but wouldn't have been able to tell you what he's from because he's just been in like one or two episodes of like everything, or he's been on like a 5-episode arc or whatever.
Yeah.
Of a bunch of things. So like, and he's been doing it for like 4 decades, almost 5 decades. So the original Miami Vice, Law and Order, Babylon 5, Becker, Touched by an Angel, Star Trek Voyager, Numbers, Prison Break, Sons of Anarchy, Castle. Yeah. Like, it's just any number of shows from any decade on network television, he's been on them.
I know him. I know him best. He had an arc on Angel as the villain of what I kind of feel like was probably like one of, if not the best, like arc of that show.
Ooh.
In the third season. Yeah. He's a really good, like kind of hateable, but also like one of those villains where it's sort of like, I really hate this. I understand where this guy's coming from, but I also hate him so much, but also I sympathize with him, but also he sucks, like that kind of villain. And he did. He's really good at it. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm so curious because he was so recognizable to me. I kind of want to just like select random stuff that he's been in to see like, what have I actually seen him in? Like, why do I know this guy?
For sure. Yeah.
As far as Spidey stuff goes, Sarah Baika has voiced characters in a bunch of Spider-Man video games. He has tons of video game credits. Lots of them are just like parts of voice casts or additional characters or whatever. But he has plenty of like named characters as well. If you name a franchise, he's probably done a voice for it in video games. Also, we didn't talk about him at the time because it was such a minor role, but he was one of Kingpin's henchmen in the new animated series. So this actually isn't the first time we've heard his voice in a Spider-Man cartoon.
That's fun. I mean, he has like one of those voices that are just like perfect for just any villain. I know he was like the Harbinger Reaper in Mass Effect 2, which the whole thing was just talking like a big scary monster the whole time, basically. Yeah. So he's good at that kind of stuff.
For
you
sure.
Know? Like, I mean, honestly, I feel like his performance as Living Laser is probably like the most basic performance that he just really ever gives, because it's just bad guy voice. At least he does so many of those. Like he's not really asked to do very much for this character, but
no.
I like that he's doing it. He does the bad guy voice very well.
Yeah, he does it very well. I don't know how much we're going to talk about Living Laser in this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that speaks to the point that, like, it's the most basic portrayal of, like, a villain voice, because Living Laser isn't in this episode to be a character so much as, like, a plot device.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? So it makes perfect sense that he's not, like, doing the drama for this role.
Yeah, I think it's a good use of, like, a character with his particular power
for
set.
For sure.
I do think his design is cool as hell. I really like the design of it. I mean, I just like, I'm not familiar with the character either. I just like Googled it, and I know like the classic Living Laser design is just a dude in a suit. So I like this sort of interpretation as like a living being of light that looks kind of like a light monster. Honestly, it doesn't even really look like a person. I love that.
Yeah, I'm into it. It's a cool design. I mean, for a character I know nothing about, like,
yeah,
I think he's cool.
For sure. I dig it.
Yeah. So those are our primary players here. So I guess without further ado, we can just jump in, eh?
Let's do it, eh?
So this episode opens mid-battle between Spider-Man and the Living Laser. We meet Living Laser right off the bat, which I think kind of tells you that he's not going to be like the big build-up character here. Or at least personality. And we learn very quickly that Living Laser was a former Stark Industries employee who is now, through some sort of accident, I'm sure, made of photons. Like, he is a pure energy being.
Cool.
Okay. Very, very cool.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I like that, like, when they're talking about it, Spider-Man's, it means he can do that, and it's just, like, grow really big.
He gets big.
I feel like of all the things you could do with a being made of photons, like, grow really big wouldn't be at the top of my mind, but, yeah. I mean, I guess it's...
Also, like, undersells, like, how he can get big. Like, he basically just is... infinite.
Like, yeah,
that's really how he does it, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's they really undersell the ability here, but this is, I feel like I'd be interested to see what other stories he's been utilized in, because it feels like the type of villain that could be anything from like a minor annoyance to like a universe ending sort of threat.
Yeah.
Depending on how they use him.
I feel like he very easily can sort of fulfill the same role that Electro does in a lot of ways.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like Electro also sometimes is just a being of pure electricity, mm-hmm. whatever that means, in the same way that Living Laser is a being of pure light, whatever that means. Like, you can kind of do whatever you want with it and go as comic booky as you really want with it.
Yeah.
So I like their use of him in this episode a lot. I think it's a really fun kind of clever thing to do. Yeah. I also like in this opening, there's almost like, I don't know exactly what the name for it is, but there's that very, when the team arrives, there's that very, like, it's like everything is tilted and it's almost like a fisheye lens a little bit with when they do their cool poses, and then it holds with like the tilted look for a while. It's just kind of cool. I mean, it just, again, looks very anime, even more than this show normally does. And just, that kind of stuck out to me at the beginning of it.
Yeah, I like it. I like that they arrive here. They really don't dwell on this, but like, it really feels like they are just showing up to a fight that Spidey found himself in, mm-hmm. which has kind of been a point of contention. The fact that he's trying to do his own thing from time to time, and they're like, no, let us in. They don't really dwell on it here, but I do like that it seems to be a thing that the storytellers are constantly aware of, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's still a conflict of this episode, is just him trying, you know, operating regardless of the, you know, the rest of the team. So,
Yeah. So they show up, all of them, as they're kind of like talking about what's going on and like being awed at Living Laser get big, they hear some sort of like strange noise. And when they hear this, Living Laser just sort of like blinks out, like he's just like gone. And then they hear the noise again and realize the source is Iron Man. So very quickly, like minutes into this episode, Iron Man arrives.
Yeah, just flying around making sonic booms.
Yep. Sonic boom.
Yeah, so Nick Fury arrives shortly after and gives Iron Man a hard time about one of his quote-unquote sparring partners wreaking havoc on the city. And as Iron Man's kind of attempting to assuage Fury's concern, Spidey interrupts with a strategy to stop Living Laser, which impresses Iron Man. So Iron Man's like, okay, you seem cool, kid, so I'm actually going to invite you to visit Stark Industries. And there's this whole running thing where Spider-Man like clearly has a pretty big crush on Iron Man, like to the point that they have a cutaway to Spider-Man being surrounded by these weird little Iron Man Cupids and hearts and stuff. And like,
they play on the crushiness of it more than like 2017, where he just like geeks out over meeting like these big science titans, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's definitely like a little bit of that underlying like no homo-ness to it, because it's like, ooh, you've got a man crush or whatever. But I do like that it is just like Spider-Man really is just crushing on Iron Man. Like, there's not really any. It is just like a kid and his like teen heartthrob basically just happens to be Tony Stark. I do kind of love that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and it's totally within the realm of like normalcy. Like, he's a 15-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Who's like idolizing and crushing on this hot playboy, cool, smart guy. You know what I mean? Like, it makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, despite Nick Fury's explicit warning to avoid Iron Man, because in this universe, or at least this particular show, I don't know how it plays out in other, other shows connected to this universe. Mm-hmm. In this particular show, Nick Fury very clearly finds Iron Man annoying and arrogant, and kind of like careless almost, right? So he says, just stay away from Iron Man. He's going to be a bad influence. Despite this, Spider-Man takes up the offer for a tour, of course, through Stark's R&D department, basically, and just geeks out about like everything he sees. Like, they have a whole joke about like, that's the biggest pill ever. And they don't say it's not, and he just geeks out over it because it's a massive pill, I guess.
I guess so. Sure, whatever that means.
But like, everything he sees is amazing because it's at Stark Industries.
Yeah. I like him, like, I don't even remember why he just starts dancing in front of the robot. He just does. But I like that, like, not only is like the scientist kind of confused and weirded out, but like this like faceless robot that just looks like kind of a giant, like just big, like piece of metal on legs. Like it's not personified or anything. Like, it doesn't have a human face. It's just like a not humanoid robot at all. And even the robot looks kind of confused.
Like, I guess the idea is that like, he's impressed by everything and doesn't know what anything is. So he's just like calling things that he's almost like having an aerial moment where he's like, we know it's a fork, but it's actually a dingle hopper, you know? So he's just like looking at things and being like, that robot's clearly meant to dance and it's not doing a very good job. So like put more funk into it. Or this guy's working on some sort of like weird capsule technology. And he's like, holy shit, a huge pill. Like, he doesn't know what anything is, but is like totally impressed. I mean, maybe that's the joke, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it ends up being funny without like it being totally clear because he's just acting a fool in like a cute, geeky teenager way.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's just acting like a little weirdo and, you know, which
little science freak.
Course, little science freak. Yeah.
It's his like early 2017 moment, right? Isn't that the show where Peter is at the start of the show, like just the most annoying, like science friend you have.
Yeah.
I feel is this show's moment where he's just like, oh my God, everything is science.
Right.
Everything's so cool. Well, at the end of the tour, Stark presents him with his own new tech, something he says he just whipped up in an hour of his time off. You know, just had some free time, so he whipped this up.
Of course.
And we see sort of a peek at it, and it's very clearly the Iron Spider suit, which is also indicated by the title of this episode.
Yeah. I mean, looks pretty, it's pulled right out of the comics. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah. I'm curious. I don't know if we've ever had this conversation because we've never run into it. I don't think in anything that we've really done. Like, what do you think of the Iron Spider suit in general? Because its design is pretty much always the same across comics and this and like video as in the video game, too. Like, do you have any strong opinions either way about it?
I don't have any well-informed opinions about it because I don't know much about its comic origins. Like, I don't know where it was supposed to come from. I think it's a Civil War thing, right?
Yeah, it's a Civil War
thing. Okay. So, like, maybe if I had fuller context, because I've never actually read Civil War, I might have, like, an informed opinion about it. So I can really kind of only go on, like, what it looks like. And I think it looks cool as hell. Like, I don't know that I want... Then this is a conversation you and I had when we were doing our movie commentaries. I don't know that I ever need Spider-Man to be in, like, the highest of tech. And I think this episode really interrogates that exact question. But I do think it's a cool as hell design. As far as like Spider-Man suits go, I think it's neat. It'll never be one of my favorites because I do like Spider-Man suits to have details. And this one is like pretty detailless. It's like very sleek and like solid color. But it's cool.
Yeah.
It bothers me that there's only three arms. I don't know if there's a reason for that. Isn't it often portrayed with only three arms?
You know what? Now I'm questioning if it does or not.
I don't know if it always does, but I think it frequently only has three.
Because I think in the game it has four, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah, in the games I think they have four. In the movies it has four, but I'm looking at some art from some comic and it only has three.
Yeah, that's stupid.
And I'm looking at an action figure that only has three.
That's dumb.
So again, I don't know if there's a reason for that, but it bothers me.
Yeah, it should. That's silly. Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I really do like how it looks. I think the colors and the design of it is really
red
cool.
And gold is a great color.
Red and gold is a very good color, and I think that like I like the design of the eyes and everything, and I love and I do love the legs that come out of it. I think it's a very cool feature. Like if you're gonna do a mechanical Spider-Man suit, that's just like a cool thing to have.
Yeah.
But definitely not a thing that I want as a permanent feature for Spider-Man ever, which it like pretty much never is.
And I don't think it was ever intended to be.
Yeah. I don't think it was ever intended to be either. I think I'm always very much like, I also like, I don't really want a high tech Spider-Man suit. Like he should have the spandex,
gadgets,
whatever. With
but
gadgets.
I don't want the suit to be the gadget.
I think the MCU found a good fusion with making the Iron Spider suit still like have more detail in it to look more like a traditional Spider-Man suit.
Yeah.
But even with all of that, I would still rather him just be in a spandex suit, you know?
Yeah.
I was just sort of curious. I think it's like a cool thing. I don't feel strongly that it I don't feel super strongly about it. It's like cool when you see it, but I don't want it, really. You know what I mean? It's like, I like how it's deployed in this episode for the most part, because it's like for a very particular reason, and the sort of lesson is maybe you don't need it, Peter, though it is kind of undermined at the end of the episode, but we can get to that when we get to it. But I like that the majority of it is sort of like, you actually don't, this isn't who you are. And I think that's true. It's a cool fucking looking thing that he doesn't really need.
Right.
But
ultimately is kind of like how the MCU goes about it a different way, but I do think Spider-Man stories often will end up in that same destination. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there is sort of like, most of the time you can kind of trust that it'll get there. It was harder with the movies because we didn't, you know, movies are different.
Yeah. And they did kind of go
that universe
a little
is very different.
And they did kind of go a little bit back and forth in a lot of ways about what direction it's supposed to go in.
But at least in a serialized story, you usually can kind of, you can usually predict correctly that it'll be like a short term thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. But where were we? We're in this tour, right?
Yeah. Still? Yeah. And there's one other thing worth noting in this tour. And that is, that we get our first Spider-Verse gag here.
Yeah.
I don't know if they knew that they were going to tackle that. Well, no, that, well,
when did Spider-Verse happen in the comics? Was that wasn't even until like 2013 or something.
I was just trying to think that while I was talking. I was trying to do both at the same time. I don't think it happened yet. So they couldn't have known. But obviously we have seen things where there are different Spider people from different realities or dimensions or whatever. So the joke certainly comes with precedent, right?
Yeah.
But as far as like actually being a Spider-Verse reference, this wasn't actually one.
Yeah. Well, it's less, and it's less like Spider-Verse and more just like different like art styles, basically. Cause the three that you see in the cutaway describing being pulled across different universes is Spider-Ham. Of course you get a quick glimpse of Spider-Ham.
Yeah, you got it.
But then there's also the superhero squad show that was airing at the time. Those like, that's like, that was a show for like little kids. So they're very like exaggerated, like big head, big feet designs, basically.
They look like kids action figure toys.
Yeah. Right. So there's that. And then there's just like your standard chibi designs, which I kind of would have rather like something totally different, because we see the chibi stuff all the time, but it's fine.
I think if this joke had happened later, we would have gotten something a little bit more unique in the third one, but you know,
for sure, for sure.
And this joke comes from this device, I guess. It's a huge device, so it feels weird calling it that. That Stark calls a molecular disruptor that can result in multidimensional rifts. So that's kind of how they get their pre-Spider-Verse gag in there.
You know, no big deal. Just a little trinket that does some silly stuff.
Yeah, whatever. Just, you know. I also love that he just like drops multidimensional rifts and like Peter doesn't bat an eye.
No, it's just like, well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be able to do that? Hello.
I will say, to this episode's credit, even though they kind of dwell on this, I think because they make a joke out of it, and we've already seen a whole montage of Peter, like, you know, looking at bizarre Stark equipment and just like fanboying over it, it didn't occur to me that this was going to actually play a role in the climax.
Nope.
Even as heavy as they go into explaining what it does, there's so many things in the show that this show will go on a tangent for the sake of a joke that's what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think it's sort of clever that they use like your expectations of how the show works with comedy to sort of make the plot a little bit less predictable by the end of it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, later at the helicarrier, the team begins a SHIELD exercise training without Spidey, because guess what? He's late.
What? Peter Parker late?
Yeah, that never happens. So after they've sort of finished their first round, Spider-Man crashes through the wall in his new Iron Spider suit. And this isn't even like the way that they're doing Iron Spider, because I think in the comics, I don't think he has like repulsor rays and shit. I think it is just a steel
like
spider
armor.
Suit with the cool legs. It's just armor. Yeah. But this one, their interpretation of it, which I think is a very smart thing to do, is that it is literally like, what if Spider-Man was Iron Man? Mm-hmm. So he actually is flying in with like the repulsors and jets, just like Iron Man would, but doing it badly because he's a 15-year-old who's never been in an Iron Man suit before until this day.
He doesn't even have a driver's license, Derek.
Oh yeah. That's a funny joke that we might hear a few times. the team is like rightfully unimpressed, because Spider-Man just immediately just loses control and just like destroys everything, just crashes into shit, blows stuff up. All he was trying to do was just hover. So good job,
yeah.
Buddy.
Yeah, he sucks at this immediately.
It's pretty bad.
And then this actually kind of like threw me off. It's interesting that they do this particular way of telling the story, because they have this suit introduced to the team, and then we cut to a montage kind of him fucking up over and over in like team battles and rescue missions. And we realize that this montage is actually kind of the team like complaining to Fury about all the things he's been doing because he sucks at the suit.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have done this a little bit more smoothly, because I had to like stop and think about like, wait, did I miss a beat or not? But I do appreciate that they are willing to try to like move things along quickly, because what I wouldn't want is for them to dwell too long on the I'm getting used to my suit, because the whole point is that he never really does.
Yeah, I agree. I am willing. I agree with you when I was watching it that it's sort of like, wait, what just happened? They're just kind of speeding through the story, aren't they? But I think that I will take a sort of messy but like quick way to sort of just speed through this for the sake of having like a stronger plot, being able to devote more time to a stronger plot for the last half of the episode. I'm willing to let them have that. It's sort of like, you know what?
Yeah.
This was a little bit clunky, but like, we all know what this is, right? Yeah. We know that the whole story would be him fucking up a bunch and blowing stuff up in funny ways, and everybody gets annoyed. We don't need a full sequence of that. Just spoon feed that to us so we can get past that. We already know that that's the state of things. Let's see what happens after that, because that's way more interesting.
Well, I do think we're starting to figure out some of the characteristics of this show that aren't the obvious like comedy at the front and team at the front type of characteristics. Mm-hmm. And I think one of them, because this isn't the first time we've seen something like this where they dump a ton of exposition that will be important to the story they want to tell that week, and they'll front load the episode with like, here are where the pieces are on the board, mm-hmm. we're gonna really quickly run you through them, and then we're gonna tell our story. And I think for this show where it's at early on in the series, it's fine, because then they kind of get to rapidly tell lots of different kinds of stories. I will be curious to see how long this particular method of storytelling on a week-to-week basis lasts, because I could see it getting kind of exhausting to like constantly info dump at the start and then do like I agree with you. I think it was smart in this case to just info dump at the start so they can have a stronger plot in the back half. Because otherwise we run into a situation like with the 90s show or with other shows we've talked about where they do so much build up and then they have to rush to the end, you know?
Oh, think about some Spider-Man Unlimited episodes where it's just like the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The whole third act is like 3 minutes at the end of the episode and it just ends.
Yeah. Or like any show prior to the 90s show fell victim to this a lot.
Yeah.
Where they had to rush the ending. So I'd rather they rush the start and then, you know, give the actual conflict time to breathe.
Well, especially if they have the advantage of being able to break the fourth wall and have their cutaways. So you can literally, episode at the beginning, it is Nova. I think Nova is just like, give me the S.H.I.E.L.D. wiki page on this villain.
Yep.
And so they can literally just say, this is Living Laser and he does this. That's all you need to know. Let's move on. Like, and it just establishes what all his powers are and what he can do. And that's going to come up later in the episode. And you got it right up in the front. Like,
honestly, like, I get why people might not like it, but knowing that this show isn't trying to be like other shows and it has its own character, like characteristics and personality, like I'm kind of vibing with that for what the show's doing.
Yeah. Well, and in the show's defense too, like you might argue like it's tell don't show is what they're doing, but how many comics,
they built the structure to allow for that.
They do, and also how many comics, especially, you know, older comics, the classic comics, the ones that are revered, is it just an editor's note with Stan Lee writing a big text box explaining, hey, this character came from this and this character came from that. There you go. And it's just telling you right off the bat, like, you know, that's just kind of par the course in the history of comics for better or worse, you know?
Well, fourth wall breaking allows you to break that rule of show don't tell. I mean, it really, they really did set themselves up. They're allowed to use jokes jokes, fourth wall breaks, unconventional yeah. structure in a way that you normally would steer clear of because it's like bad form or bad storytelling. But they basically told us up front, based on what they want the show to be, like, here's our good storytelling. Like, here's yeah. what we're going to do to tell good stories. And it's like, okay, you right. rewrote the rules. Good job.
Right, right.
So
yep.
it's interesting. I like seeing the characteristics of the show that aren't the more obvious ones. I think yeah. that's fun to parse out.
For sure. It makes me realize just that how much more different this show is than we already thought it was. And we yeah. already thought it was pretty different. So.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. But, you know, he's fucking up a lot in this montage. So naturally, his teammates are going to kind of complain to Fury. But before Fury can respond, they're alerted to a threat, which is the return of the living laser. So Fury sends the team into the field, but because he's been fucking up a lot, without Spider-Man.
This moment actually like hits harder than I thought it would.
I think so too. Yeah. I mean,
sort of realization. Cause I think the team even asks like, are you going to have Spider-Man come with us? Or, and he's like, no, just go. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately for the team, and I guess for Nick Fury, Spider-Man learns of the threat anyway. We learn he knows this through the suit itself. I guess the suit is tracking Living Laser. So he shows up anyway, and then has the audacity to tear down his own teammates in front of them when he's attempting to talk shit on the laser. So, like, not only is he fucking up a bunch, he's being, like, very cocky about it without having any reason to be.
Yeah, you haven't actually ever done anything cool
no.
in the suit the entire time.
But
buddy.
You know what? They do such a good job in that montage of making us see that without Spider-Man seeing that. So like,
that's true.
He does things and doesn't notice that his teammates are constantly cleaning up after him.
Yeah.
Or like remember in what, like the second episode, I think it was, maybe even the first one, where the team is doing a bunch of stuff and Spider-Man has to like quickly fix their messes and make sure that like they don't accidentally like kill people in the process.
Yeah.
Like they're doing that for him in this montage and they don't dwell on it for a long time, but it's very clear. So like when he rolls up and is like, I'm the greatest. And they're like, oh my God, dude, it truly yeah. is because he just hasn't noticed that role reversal.
That's such a good way. That's such a good way to put it. It's a classic arrogance thing, but I didn't even really think about that. That like, oh yeah, it's they did do a good job where from his point of view, he has been very cool. It really is just everyone else is seeing what it really is that he fucking looks like an idiot and he's actually really fucking everything up badly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
It's great though, because in this moment, probably because he's just like tears them down, like puts them down right in front of them, like this is when they finally confront him. I mean, like, they don't make a big deal of this, but like part of the reason things get so bad, I mean, it's Spider-Man's fault because he's doing a shitty job, but part of the reason it goes on for so long is they're clearly like not sure how to bring up to him that his suit sucks and he sucks, right? Because I think he is technically the designated leader of the team, so like this is their breaking point. Him trashing them is their breaking point. So Power Man is like, maybe you should take a seat. We got this. Living Laser calls him a sycophant for Stark.
So funny. I love that line.
So great. A Stark sycophant, which is nice. And then Spidey's like, both of you don't know what you're talking about. I got this. And then immediately crashes himself into a billboard.
I genuinely laughed out loud because he busts through the billboard, but my favorite part about that is that he gets up from like it creates the classic cartoon cutout that's just the shape of his body, right? Which is very on brand for the show, but then he gets up and like sort of like carefully tries to replace the cutout of himself like onto the billboard, and then it just falls back over again. It's just so funny because I fucking love that. It's
they
timed
do
so well.
Such a good job of making him an absolute dumbass goober doofus.
Yeah.
Like
he really
like
is just a full on Looney Tune.
At the same time. Yeah,
he's a full on Looney Tune in this episode. Like they amp up the physical comedy for him to make him look even more like an idiot.
Yeah,
with the suit on.
And there's a part of me. I remember this episode from the first couple times I watched this first season, you know, like this is one that really stuck with me. And I remember this episode feeling annoying to me. But like watching it sort of critically, I'm like, okay, then it's succeeding. Like, he's very clearly supposed to be the most annoying person on screen, like for the first half of this episode. And yeah. So there is this like weird fine line you have to walk when you make your protagonist annoying, because it can be really off-putting. And I'm sure for some people it is. But I do think when you really like slow down and look at all of the things they're building up, it actually, they do walk the line pretty well, I think.
I agree with you. I mean, yeah, I definitely could see people absolutely hating this episode with every fiber of their being, because your protagonist and your favorite superhero is acting like a fool the whole time. But I for the story they're telling, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think that it, aside from one point at the end, I think it more or less like kind of justifies itself and comes to a good conclusion. Like it's like Spider-Man 3, where they make him look bad and arrogant so that he could sort of learn a lesson about humility at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing people famously love.
Yeah. Another thing that I appreciated after watching it a couple more times. Because I probably was one of those people that watched this episode casually and was just like, fuck this episode. It's annoying.
Yeah, it's annoying. I mean, yeah, and this show often, I think, if you are not in the mood for a lot of fast paced, loud noises and people screaming, you're not gonna like it. You really won't. But as long as you're willing to just like be open to just like your Looney Tunes comedy, like you got it. It's fine.
Right. Yeah. And why they're doing it, right? Like that's the question you and I are always gonna ask, is like, why are they doing this the way that they're doing it? And I think if you're willing to ask that question, you're gonna land in a place where even if you don't like it, you can appreciate what they did.
Yeah, I just understand it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So Living Laser flees from the group. I guess that makes sense. You know, the whole group shows up and so he's like, no thanks. And in his wake, Spider-Man's teammates all finally tell him just how dangerous, annoying, and ineffective he's been since getting the Iron Spider suit. Like, pretty directly. White Tiger says Laser didn't even have to touch Spider-Man for Spider-Man to damage his own suit. There's this really great moment where Spider-Man's like, it wasn't my fault, he didn't even touch me. And White Tiger just says, he didn't have to, which is great. Nova remarks that Peter ditched his own teammates immediately for some guy he just met, which is true, even if he does very clearly have a big, massive crush on Tony Stark. Yeah.
How often is that story among friends where there's like a tight group of friends and then someone starts dating someone else and then suddenly is like just 100% in that relationship and never hangs out with their friends again?
And sometimes doesn't see like how that's like affected those people or why they would see it the way they see it, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's just sort of like, but it's my partner. Like we're in love, but it's like, but there are also other people in your life too.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then Iron Fist, who I am growing to appreciate, rapidly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Points out that, you know, even though Stark gave you that stuff, Stark succeeded by following his own path. It's kind of what he's known for, is like being a trailblazer in technology. He didn't get to be successful by following someone else's path.
I like that a lot.
I think it's great. And I actually love that they follow up on that later. Mm-hmm. And then they all just walk away from Spider-Man. Like they just fully walk away, sort of symbolically severing him from their team.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, just walk down the street.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And after they've all left, Spider-Man attempts to fly off, but, weird, he can't. And he learns that, the reason he can't is because Living Laser, being made of photons, has been able to infiltrate his suit and actually, like, fully take it over. So, like, Living Laser is the Iron Spider suit right now.
This was a good mini fake out because he damages his suit. And so at first, for just a moment, they don't, you know, spend forever on it. For just a moment, you're like, oh, shoot, he broke his suit enough that he can't actually fly. What a Parker thing to do.
Right.
And then you realize like, oh, no, it's worse.
Yeah. Can I tell you, too, it's just a funny coincidence that I've been watching through the DCAU recently, like the DC animated shows. And I like just the other day just watched the Batman Beyond episode where his suit is like taken over by the sort of like digitized spirit of that dead guy, basically.
Yeah.
And it's the same deal where it's like a bunch of green light goes through all like the interior wires. And then suddenly Terry is trapped in his own suit and can't control his body because his, an old mean mad guy is making it move and controlling his suit.
I mean, honestly, like this is a cool trope. I love this trope because it's terrifying. It's like, it's not frequently presented as a horror trope. It's usually a sci-fi trope, but like, it's really terrifying. This idea that you can be inside of a suit that someone else is in control of. So as it wreaks havoc or commits violent acts or does horrifying things, you can't do anything and you just are there to witness it.
Yeah.
Or in some cases you're knocked out cold. I think it's more terrifying when you can witness it. But just the idea that a human body can be trapped inside of a full suit that they have no control over. We saw this in 2017 at some point, didn't we? I mean, this isn't even the first time I think we've talked about a suit that's been taken over, because wasn't Iron Man's suit taken over in that show too?
Yes, it was.
And I have to imagine that's a big Iron Man thing. I mean, the movies explore that too. Like, it's just, it's hard not to play with that at least.
Yeah, and there's a little bit with, you know, Peter and with the symbiote suit sometimes too.
Oh yeah.
On how it's played, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is. It's frightening to have the clothes you're wearing trying to kill you from within, and also making your body move. Like, yeah, there's something very terrifying about
that. So creepy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It works for me pretty much every time.
It does.
As long as they're willing to like do something kind of neat and I guess like high stakes with it. Like I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, this show, this episode definitely does. Mm-hmm. And I think like the thing that's super terrifying about it too, outside of everything else I already said, is also like, you literally can't do anything, which means that it is like, I don't feel like I've ever seen a version of that story. I mean, I guess the symbiote stuff notwithstanding, I've never seen a version of that story where the person within the suit is able to like really get themselves out necessarily.
No.
Like, it always ends up having to be someone else or an outside source or something like that affecting it, which is how it is in this episode. Like Peter probably would have just died if Iron Man wasn't in this episode.
I mean, that's ultimate claustrophobia, right? Because like the only reason any of these exosuits don't feel claustrophobic most of the time is because the assumption is the person inside has direct control over the movement. But the moment you take that ability away, they're just in they're like a tomb, like an airtight tomb.
Oof, yeah.
Hey, didn't Phineas and Ferb do this too?
Oh shit. Oh my God. Wait, wasn't Adrian Pastar doing the voice in that episode too?
That might be a place where we brought him up. Yeah.
I think that, cause I think it was him and Drake Bell both in that episode.
They played it off as like a joke, but I think we talked about how horrifying it was then too.
We totally did. He's just, I forgot stuck about that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So funny.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I'm glad you remember that. Yeah, that completely left my brain. But yeah, that was like the whole running gag of that episode with him.
I just love, I think this is I don't think I've ever realized it, but I think this is like one of my favorite sci-fi tropes.
It's good. It's really a good, scary trope, man. Yeah,
very, very scary. So anyway, Laser immediately directs the suit to find and attack Iron Man. And of course, Peter is in it the entire time, right? So Laser is controlling the Iron Spider suit. Peter can't do anything but witness. He is awake for this. And when he finds him, Iron Man comments, and I thought they were going to do more with this. Iron Man comments that Laser shouldn't be smart enough to crack the Iron Spider's security. I thought that was going to play a bigger role, given that we do have some behind the scenes baddies, but it doesn't seem like it has, unless we see Laser again. I don't remember.
It didn't even occur to me, actually.
Yeah. I guess it could just be an Iron Man quip, for lack of a better term, because the way he says it is, I didn't think your IQ was high enough, or your IQ isn't high enough. So
yeah, I maybe don't think it was just a dig. I
was ready for it to be like, oh, there's a puppeteer here.
Yeah.
But anyway, he makes this remark, and then Laser just totally ignores it and presents Iron Man with an ultimatum. He says, shut down your Iron Man suit security, or watch as I heat up this Iron Spider suit until the kid inside just cooks alive.
Yikes.
Holy shit.
Yikes.
Holy shit. Also, I think, I don't know if this was confirmed prior to this point. I guess, you know, you could presume it, but I think this is the moment where it is confirmed in this series that Tony Stark has to know Peter Parker's identity. Because when Peter Parker talks to him via the suit, it shows Peter Parker's face, not Spider-Man.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right. It's funny.
And I guess if he's been wearing the suit for a week, you could assume any version of Tony Stark probably has figured it out.
Yeah, but it would make, like, I wasn't even thinking about that. Because, you know, in the beginning when he's at Stark, Stark's labs, he has a Spider-Man suit. But yeah, there's no reason why he wouldn't know it's Peter at this point. You could just assume that he just either figures it out off screen or confers it off screen or whatever.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. I feel like he usually figures it out.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. Makes sense. Obviously, Iron Man... I say obviously. Yeah, I think every version of Iron Man is going to do this. So obviously Iron Man chooses to deactivate his own suit security and laser jumps from the Iron Spider suit to Iron Man suit and then flies off.
Yes, he
does. I've been doing okay so far, given we have three characters with the name Iron in it.
I think it does help that Iron Fist and Iron Man haven't been in the same scenes or interacted that much.
That's right. Like, fuck giving me credit.
No. I mean, I'm saying that it helps.
No, I agree with you. Yeah. It is helpful.
I think the hardest part is when, like, Iron Fist and Power Man are both doing stuff together and have to say their names in the same sentence.
And then it's Iron, like, Man comes almost, out.
It's almost impossible to not get them confused in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could also just not call him Power Man like the most of the world does.
I would be fine with that. Who cares? Luke Cage. He's Luke Cage. It's a cooler name.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody agrees that it's a cooler name.
Everyone.
Oh, boy. So back at S.H.I.E.L.D., Spider-Man's teammates find him working on the Iron Spider suit, and he's also concocting a plan to fix his mistakes alone. And he is sort of actually calling out, like, yeah, I know, I've been fucking everything up by doing this. So, I understand that you wouldn't want to help me. I get it. Like, he actually is fully, like, taking responsibility and has seen how shitty and annoying he has been over the past week or however long it's been.
Visible attitudinal shift.
Yeah. And he's like very solemn and everything like that. Yeah. And it's not even like, he's not even sugarcoating or anything. It's just sort of like, I get it. I understand why you all would want to ditch me right now. So
yeah, it's
I'm
not a pity party at all.
Yeah. It's just like kind of reckoning with it. And like, yeah, I agree with you. They would have good reason to just be like, all right, peace out. But
have fun.
But obviously, like, they recognize, like, he's taking responsibility for it, right? So they're like, no, we will help you. We're a team. We're not gonna just leave you out in the dust on this. So thank you for not being an asshole about this. White Tiger attempts to make their help conditional on ditching the Iron Spider suit, because understandably, it hasn't really helped anything.
I wouldn't
ever have
fought her on that point.
No, I'm just sort of like, yeah, that seems to only cause problems. If you're fighting a villain who can jump from one suit to the other, maybe introducing another suit is not the best course of action.
Yeah,
actually.
And I wouldn't even have been mad if this was the point in the episode where the suit were ditched. I get why they keep it for a little bit longer based on what he does with it. But I think they could have gotten away with this just being the point.
Yeah,
but I like what Iron Fist says, so I wouldn't give it up for what Iron Fist says.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit, well, we'll talk about it. Because I thought that they were going with it, and then I was sort of confused when he still goes with the suit, and I'm just like, well, wait, where's this episode going then? But yeah, we can talk through that. But yeah, Iron Fist, like you were saying, sees a compromise, because Spider-Man insists that he's on his own path with the suit now. And so they can forget that condition, because even if he's got the suit, it's on his own path with the suit. He's not going to be doing things like Iron Man does.
Yeah. I wish I had written down exactly what Iron Fist says. It's something really subtle and normal, but I feel like it's something like, I think he just says something to the effect of, like, it's different this time or something like that. Right,
yeah.
Peter? Or like I don't know what he says. God damn, I'm so mad I didn't write it down. Iron Fist, for as little as he's in this episode, really, like, made an impact, I think.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I still, when the scene was over, I was, like, a little bit confused Well, I think, let's just talk through the next stuff, because I have some, a little bit of confusion and issues with some of how this goes. I feel like the ideas maybe don't match the execution, but basically, the next scene, the team meets Living Laser, who of course is still in control of the Iron Man suit. They're at Stark Industries, and a battle, of course, ensues, which you'd expect. So while his teammates hold off Laser's Iron Man attacks, Spider-Man initiates a defibrillator sequence directly to Tony Stark's brain in the Iron Man suit. That feels
horrible.
I just can't. That's a lot.
It's also like, fully unnecessary. Like Tony Stark is knocked out in the suit, right? They need a way to wake him up. And for some reason, Tony Stark built into his own suit, I guess the only way to wake him up is through this like direct to the brain defibrillator. Why doesn't he have just like smelling salts in his suit? Like, I don't understand why you don't have something slightly less horrifying and like damaging to your brain. Also, Tony Stark would never allow himself or anyone else to do that to his brain.
Right. Tony Stark? Why his brain? Why wouldn't it just be like a like electrical pulse to like shock him awake or something like that? Right. Why is it like, why do they go to this extreme with it?
Yeah, like, especially because he wakes up
screaming painfully, like as it stands. He got fucking electrocuted in the brain. Like, I don't understand. Why was that the solution?
Yeah, I actually don't. The more I think about it, it doesn't hurt the episode, but like the more I think about it, the more I don't like it.
I don't know. See, here's my issue, because the other detail is that Spider-Man at one point is like, he shoots Living Laser and he's like, "Hey, repulsor webbing, isn't that cool?" Which on the outset, when you're just saying that, I thought that sort of like, oh, that's sort of part of what they were saying before with Spider-Man being on his own path, that he's going to swap out the Stark tech for like, he's going to kind of fuse like the coolness of the suit, but adopt his own Spider-Man technology to it and actually still use webbing instead of repulsors. The problem is that he still is just shooting repulsors. It's not repulsor webbing. He's just shooting laser blasts out of the palm of his hand like he normally does.
Right, the same way too. Webbing. It's not like he moved where it's coming from to where his web shooters typically are.
Right.
Because he knows how to aim that way or something. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah,
I'm with you. I do think the idea is better than the execution. I think there's a way that they could do this where he keeps the Iron Spider suit because that's what Laser's expecting and he can play off of that. And the whole point is that the suit represented something he wasn't, and that wasn't-ness was how he was able to sort of defeat Living Laser, right? He could fool him by pretending to be Iron Spider when really underneath he was just being Spider-Man. Like, you could do something cool with that. Or, like you said, you kind of strip down all the Stark tech bits of it and it's just armor that he's using because Living Laser is powerful or because of where they are. Like, there's definitely a way to do it, but I think they needed to strip pretty much every element of the Stark part from it and really like build on the idea that it is just really not Stark tech anymore.
Yeah.
It's like it's Stark tech in image only.
Right. And also I was going to say too, the reason I brought it up then is that in addition to the repulsor webbing stuff, I feel like if he actually had been using like cool webbing with the Stark tech that he came up with himself, I feel like his way of waking Tony Stark up should have been a Spider-Man thing, not just, I know a thing in Tony Stark's suit that I can activate. Like, I feel like I like their idea of him going his own path with this suit, but it just doesn't happen. He still is only doing Iron Man things. He's still only using Iron Man tech. He's still only like using an Iron Man sequence in this particular sequence. Like, so I don't feel like it really jives with what they were just setting up.
I'll give them one point, because I was hopeful at first, because for almost the entire episode, he ditched his spider agility for jets on his hands and his feet. And when this scene starts, he's not using them anymore. He's wall crawling and jumping and doing all that sort of stuff. So I was hopeful. I was like, oh, cool. Okay. Like, so he recognized that, like, I have my own innate abilities and I am good enough. So I need to rely on that. And then they do undercut it with all the things that I agree with you don't make sense, like the repulsor webs that aren't webs, and saving Tony with his own tech, like all that stuff. So they like faked me out in the wrong way. Because it looked like for a second they were going to do exactly what we thought.
Yeah, I just don't understand how he's going on his own path right now? Like, what, other than not using his jets,
yeah,
what's the difference than what he was doing before, you know?
Right. I will say, though, I mean, they don't fully lose me until the end. Like, I'm willing to have this just be like not great execution, but the idea still stands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not until the very end where they fully undercut it that I'm like, oh, okay, maybe you just didn't actually...
Yeah.
Either you didn't actually get the story you were telling, which I highly doubt, or somebody said, no, you can't actually get rid of this. We want to keep it in the show.
Yeah, that latter sounds like what it is, because this ending fucking sucks.
Yeah, these are good ending writers, so...
This ending sucks and blows at the end of it.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. We don't have that much to get through, right, honestly. Let's see, where were we? Yeah, but despite a warning from Jarvis, the sequence... works, and Stark is able to purge Laser from his suit, forcing him into the open. So we've now got living Laser in his living Laser body, not possessing a suit anymore.
This is exactly where I'm going to get hung up on my own idea. This is exactly where the fake Stark suit, the fake Iron Spider suit, would be perfect, because once he's purged from Iron Man's suit, naturally you would think he would try to jump back into the Iron Spider suit.
Why wouldn't he?
And if Spider-Man basically deactivated all the Stark tech, he can't do that.
Yeah, that would be great.
So that would be perfect. You know, that's the fake out. That's the oh, I got you. Now you are out in the open.
Or honestly, he tries to jump into it. That they could nix all the dimensional stuff completely, and just the way that they actually defeat Living Laser is he jumps into the Iron Spider suit, but realizes, wait, shit, this is just a dead piece of armor, and now I can't move. And Spider-Man just basically traps him in that armor, unable to do anything.
Oh, and then he takes off the shell, and he has his red and blues underneath.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, oh, good old red and blues, like, you know. And it basically is sort of using the idea of just sort of like, yeah, I took my own path. Actually, that's how they can find that compromise.
I was me underneath the whole time.
Yeah, it was me underneath the whole time. That's how they can find the compromise of him still using and doing cool shit in the Stark tech suit, but not actually being the Stark. It's like, it's the thing that some of the MCU movies did, right? Where it's sort of like, maybe the clothes don't make the Spider-Man, right? The suit doesn't make the Spider-Man. That's him. It's sort of like, I might literally be in this Iron Spider suit right now, but that's not what makes the Spider-Man. I can use that and shed it, and I can still beat you, you know? Like, there's plenty of ways you could. I feel like that would have been a much more satisfying conclusion to this story. And then there's a justifiable reason why he doesn't continue using it, even if he wants to,
because
Living Laser is trapped inside of him. That's his prison, and he's never going to be able to use it. And if Iron Man offers to give him another one, it's just sort of be like, no, I'm good in my Spider-Man suit.
Cutaway humor.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's honestly kind of surprising they didn't do this, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because the suit isn't necessary from this point forward. It technically wasn't necessary from here, but there was like an opportunity. And now there's like really nothing left for them to use the suit for.
Yeah, it's really annoying. I mean, it's just like an Iron Man action sequence for the rest of this, basically.
Yeah.
That Spider-Man barely doesn't even need to be there much for, really. But sure, they try to work him into it, but... It feels kind of forced.
It's more like Spider-Man's the guest on the Iron Man show from this point forward. Because they put their heads together and Spider-Man's like, hey, remember when you showed me that molecular disruptor thing during the tour? And Iron Man's like, yes, bet, let's go. And so Iron Man like taunts Laser into pursuing him in the direction of the disruptor, right? And then Spider-Man and company go to a computer that controls the disruptor. And Iron Man's like, hey, make sure this thing goes off when Laser's in it, but just make sure you don't get me. Like, kind of a classic thing. It's like a timing thing, right? And that's kind of like the whole plan, which relies way more on Iron Man doing cool action stuff than it does Spider-Man.
Yeah. Cool. So Spider-Man's terrified because he's got to be in the realm of danger for this laser or whatever. But ultimately, shockingly, no one ends up fried aside from the living Laser, whose photons, aka his entire physical form, gets scattered across dimensions. And everyone's just like, oh, that's fine. His entire being has just been scattered across dimensions. Sounds great. We didn't just murder this man right now.
Well, the show tries to make it feel better by having a cutaway to him ending up in the Superhero Squad universe intact.
But it doesn't make any sense. And I thought he was scattered dimensions.
That's a joke. We know that's a joke. You just said he was scattered across dimensions.
Yeah. It's
you just said that he is basically infinitely scattered across multiple dimensions. Yeah. Otherwise, he wouldn't not like he wouldn't be neutralized as a threat.
Yeah. Yeah. Bizarre.
You can't get a superhero squad. We know what you did.
Yeah, you just straight up ripped this man to shreds, ripped him across the multiverse. Like, yeah.
Which honestly feels like a very comic book thing to do. Like it feels very appropriate for the genre.
For sure. But it is still like, goddamn.
Oh, yeah.
Brutally murdered this man.
For sure. One thing worse, like he potentially, it's sort of like, like Electro in the MTV show being like neutralized by being trapped in like a battery at the bottom of the ocean. Like he's not dead, but he's just trapped. Like he's a conscious being that can't do anything.
Or if it's even worse where like if he's scattered, if it's like form is like scattered across the multiverse, maybe his consciousness is too. And he's like experiencing,
oh my God,
he's just experiencing infinite universes all at once. Yeah.
Holy fuck. That's a way to make somebody way more powerful than they ought to be.
Yes, maybe they just created a much.
They just created a god. He's basically like an omnipotent being.
Yeah, it is
or
pretty
at least
much
an
like
omniscient being.
The culmination of everything ever all at once, basically.
Holy
like,
fuck. Oh my gosh. Damn, y'all fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch One Living Laser, big bad at the end of the series.
Look, you know what? If they revisit that, I wouldn't be mad about it.
It'd
it's
be
like,
so
cool,
wild.
Okay, we were right.
It'd be so wild.
God damn. One joke that I do like from this sequence is I do like the whole like Peter just calling whatever the equipment was called the thing and just being like, it's the thing that does the thing. That's the thing. Go to the thing. I like that because it's also like, I don't remember what it was called either. So it checks out.
Yeah. It also plays into the idea that like he really didn't know what he was looking at. That's like the one thing that registered because it's the one thing Tony Stark explained to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I also did chuckle when they literally had the like pause sequence point at the thing.
The thing. Yeah. Oh, wait. I just noticed my note for this too. The weird as hell transition. Mm-hmm. Like when they're, you know, at the control console and it's like Power Man and Iron Fist. I did say it right. Power Man and Iron Fist, like just give a look to the camera or whatever. They said something like, oh no, are we going to get through this? Or, I don't remember what they said. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They say something, look at the camera. Then it freeze frames. That freeze frames transitions into like a poster that's a giant poster
that
being held by two guys in the Stark Industry office or lobby or whatever. And they keep walking. And then in that setting, Iron Man flies by this like hot lady who's like enchanted by him in slow motion. Like that entire sequence is so bizarre. Like I was
it's
so
really
taken off
bizarre.
Guard.
And I feel like it's only it's just the product of like there has to be like one jokey humor transition that just doesn't work. Because they do enough of them, and this is the one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, normally they do a pretty good job with the frantic pace and the sort of weird rule-breaking that they do. And so far, they've been able to apply that sometimes to transitions that are okay. This one, I think it's a swing and a miss. I don't think it makes any sense. I think it's confusing to watch.
It. Yeah.
And it's not especially funny.
No.
Because it makes it seem like the conversation Iron Fist and Power Man are having or whatever they say, whatever that scene is, it makes it feel like that is fake because they walk it off the screen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's really it's weird. Bizarre. Weird. Weird.
Very
weird.
Strange.
Weird choice. Weird choice.
So weird.
Well, with Laser taken care of, Spider-Man explains to Iron Man that the Iron Spider suit had some issues, which is why he popped the hood and made some modifications.
I wish they went deeper into what modifications you made.
Yeah, well, because Iron Man's like, oh, I noticed you changed some things. And I'm like, I didn't.
Yeah,
what did
he
change? what did he do differently?
I wish like, they visually represented it in some way. Even if it was subtle things like taking off the big shoulder pieces, because he has like the big golden shoulder pieces or something, and it was a more slimmed down version with a gold spider still, but just not as bulky in its techiness, you know? Just something to make it visually clear to us as well. If people are going to comment on it being different, it should look different to us too.
Was it literally just a discrepancy between the script and like the visual direction. Like it feels like what they're writing in the dialogue just does not match what we're seeing on screen at all.
I think that's like a very possible explanation for why.
Yeah, because it just really doesn't make any sense. Like, what am I looking at? It looks like the Iron Spider suit with no differences and using it roughly the same way as he was before. Just like not crashing into buildings as much. Like, that's really, I don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I noticed the entire time that felt different was just how much more he was using his own agility.
Yeah.
That's truly the only thing that felt different.
And it didn't.
Because he
even
saves himself with the arms during the fight. So it's not like he got rid of those, you know?
It's not like the agility like came in handy that much. Like, it's not like that he saved the day with his old-fashioned Spider-Manning. Like, he jumped a few times. That's great. But he still ended up using his legs and shooting repulsors and then just press some buttons at a console and pretending the stakes for that were way higher than they actually were.
Yeah. Well, and what's weird is, not to jump on like the next thing you're going to say, but like, I thought that this conversation with Iron Man was going to be the explanation for why he no longer has the suit.
Right.
Because Iron Man seemed annoyed that he messed with the suit that Iron Man made. And then when we cut to the next thing, which is on the helicarrier, he's in his red and blues. So like, I thought Iron Man took the suit away. And I was oh, okay, that actually works really well. This is, I don't know that they fully pulled off what you and I have been talking about, but like, this is actually a decent resolution. It's like clean as far as like why he doesn't have it anymore, because Tony Stark is kind of a weird character who would make a rash decision like that. Fury doesn't want him to have the suit anyway, so it like it cleans up very nicely.
And it's sort of Spider-Man Spider-Man kind of getting his just desserts for being so arrogant and fucking up the whole time.
Exactly
Yeah. You know what I wouldn't call this show, Doug?
What?
Ever? Clean.
I really thought it was going to be. And I know it's
I did too. No, I thought it was in that direction too. Yeah. It just seems so obvious, right? Like, it just seems so clear that's what they're leaning to.
Yeah. And I think it might have. I really do. So like, because we referenced that we think maybe there was some interference here at the end. So I guess let's just get to the end. We cut to the helicarrier and he's in the red and blues and he's just talking with his team. Like, he acknowledges what he did. He's apologizing to them. He acknowledges that, like, he should have just been doing his thing the whole time. And then Fury interrupts their conversation, dismisses the rest of the team, but keeps Spider-Man behind. I feel like I figured he was going to be chastised, and this was going to be the moment where Spider-Man takes responsibility, despite Nick Fury not thinking he would or whatever. But instead, and this is the scene, it sounds like we both agree, doesn't sucks. Feel like it was written by Man of Action.
No.
Because Nick Fury excitedly shows Spider-Man a new modified version of the Iron Spider suit that he was so annoyed by. And this new version can fold into a backpack. So it's easier for Spider-Man to carry around with him and just like upgrade his suit whenever he wants. And then Spider-Man, who could have been like, you know what? No thanks. I think I learned my lesson. Like, there's multiple opportunities here to tie it up cleanly. He could have been like, no, I'm not ready for that. Instead, he's more excited than Fury and is like, this is so great. I can bring it with me everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then on top of that, the episode ends with him putting it on and just fucking up the helicarrier again. He's still bad at it.
Yeah. And Fury, I feel like what we're supposed to get from it, because Fury is sort of like, nah, I don't think you're ready for this, kid. You don't have your driver's license. And Spidey is equipped with his learner's
permit.
But I think that the implication that I got is that is Fury basically explaining why he won't be using the Iron Spider suit in every episode, because he's basically saying, we've got this and we made it a backpack for you for some reason. And I'm giving it to you right now for some reason, but only to tell you that you shouldn't actually have it because you're not ready for it. And we're not going to let you have it, except they don't really like give that enough oomph. Like, it's this weird, like middle space that's like, is kind of unclear. Like, they didn't go hard enough on, does he have it or does he not have it? It's just sort of like, they're just sort of implying that Fury probably doesn't want him to have it, but he ends the episode wearing it. So like, I don't understand.
This is the most, to me, like, written by committee moment we've seen so far.
It really just is just sort of
so
like
obvious that they said, you can't get rid of this suit yet.
Well, especially if you keep in mind that, you know, like, I know that, like, Kevin Feige isn't working on this show, but there are, like, Joe Quesada is a Marvel Entertainment executive who I'm sure has influence on, at that point, still had some influence on the synergy between movies and comics and cartoons, right? Like, they are all the executives are talking to each other. And sure, given that in the MCU, Spider-Man does end up getting the, you know, having the Iron Spider suit for multiple movies and stuff, like, obviously that is a thing that Marvel likes to have, is Spider-Man in the Iron Spider suit, because it's cool. Maybe the Civil War comic with him in it sold a lot of issues or something. I don't know. Clearly there is a thing in Marvel executives' heads where they like having that as an option for Spider-Man that they can pull out and put him into. So even though this episode clearly was written, I think, from the creative perspective of being about why Spider-Man in the old red and blues is better for him, I think that someone at Marvel up top was like, yeah, but kids like the Iron Spider suit. They sell good toys. They sell good comics. We got to make sure we get him in the Iron Spider suit. We can't wipe away that. We have to make sure that it's still very clear that he is cool in the Iron Spider suit. And the Iron Spider suit is cool, and that it is an option that we'll pull that we will pull that out again.
Right. The, like, lesson can't really feels be like that the Iron Spider suit was the problem.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, it lesson sounds like has someone to be, said that, right?
It's like, no, that right. I think that's exactly what it is. The Iron Spider suit can't be the problem. It's too cool. It cannot be the problem. The problem has to be Spider-Man just isn't ready for it. And, like, but he will be, but stay tuned, kids, because he will be later. You will be seeing this again. You can still buy the Iron Spider toy because he will be wearing it again. And you can, you know, play act a later episode too. This won't be the only episode it appears in. Remember that. Like, it just, like, reeks of that.
And the thing that's especially annoying to me is that there is still a way you could even pull this off if you kind of wrote it the right way or anticipated it the right way. I think the ending of this still kind of sucks, and it would need to be tweaked to have everybody be a little bit less excited than they are at the end. But you could, if they insisted you have to continue having the suit in the show, they are doing training exercises all the time. Peter learned that he has to not rely on this new suit, right? He learned that he has to do things his way. He is actively modifying this suit. If you insist that this suit has to be in the show, for a while, it only exists on the helicarrier in exercises. You comment every once in a while about like how he only practices with it, whatever the case may be. This show will reference itself moving forward. You know what I mean? We've already seen it do that. It referenced Doom in the episode following the Doom episode. So, like, it's not afraid to do that. So if you need to have it and then you want to use it as a sort of, like, triumphant moment where he conquers this suit in a future episode where it is needed, there's a way to pull that off. I just feel like there's no way they're going to do that. They're just going to pull it out at some point because it still exists and he has it. He's just going to have it on one day or something, you know? I mean, maybe I'm underestimating, but I just, based on how the end of this episode went, they're not leaving me hopeful that they're going to do it in sort of a crafty, nuanced way.
I just keep thinking back to, like, Spider-Man Homecoming ends with Spider-Man being like, I don't need that suit. I'm going to do my own thing. And then in Infinity War, like, the next time he appears, it's like, oh, here's your Iron Spider suit. You're just going to wear it now. Like,
he's not resistant to it. He's just like, okay.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now I'm into space. It's like, okay, well, like, and, you know.
I know, they literally make it like a life-saving situation. Like, there is no opportunity for him to be like, but I learned my lesson.
Yeah, but it's just, it's still, you know, that's like MCU, that's its own conversation with how they handle that for better or worse in some ways. I do think that's always the thing where I'm sort of like, there's a beat miss there that kind of undermines the end of the last movie. But, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. In this case, it's, like, pretty bad because it's in the context of the same episode. And there's, like, that line, like, the scene before this where Peter says, like, yeah, I learned I'm better off being an uncool me than a cool someone else. And then, like 30 seconds later, it's like, oh, no, I want to be the cool someone else. Give me the cool someone else. Right. I want the cool suit. Like, oh, my God, you know? And it's like, I'd be okay with, like, you know, I feel like you could... I don't know. Like, it's like they want to play it as sort of like a fun joke. It's like, ha, funny Peter Parker. But it's like,
transparent.
It's so transparent that it's just like, no, you were writing him to be learning a lesson and have an arc in a very clear kids show way. It's not a complicated lesson that he was learning. It was very clear that's what you were doing. And then you just undermine it at the end for the sake of a joke and B, to, like, sell your Iron Spider
again
toys.
What's weird is you can do both. You can do the joke because they do imagination gags all the time, where it's like you see a scenario play out and then you realize it was in his head the whole time. You can do the joke and make us chuckle and then cut away and have him be like, all right, actually, that would be a bad idea. You know, like there's so many ways they could have pulled this off, which is why I'm so confident this couldn't have been Man of Action's plan for the end of this episode. There's just no way. It's so obviously different. It sticks out like such a sore thumb at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
It bums me out so much. And it's funny because this isn't even like my favorite episode or anything. Like, I think it's fine. I think there were things that needed tweaked and tightened up. But the end of it sucks so... But I like a lot of it. And so the end of it sucks so bad given that.
Yeah. It's such a fucking downer, man.
It's such a bummer.
God.
I don't remember. Does Man of Action write much beyond the first season? Do you know if they continue writing?
I think
like
they
throughout
write
the whole series.
I think they write throughout the whole series. Okay. I think. Yeah.
Okay. My hope is that this happens less and they are interfered with less.
I don't know.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know what to expect, honestly.
Yeah. That's my wish. And I could just look it up, but you know, I'm not gonna.
Jeez. This episode's frustrating. There's some fun faces in it, though.
There really are.
Yeah. So one of them, there's a cutaway gag when Spider-Man, it's like, I think it's a dream sequence of Spider-Man just hanging out with Iron Man the whole time.
Yeah.
And there's a point when like he just drinks a milkshake for some reason. And then he has like a milkshake mustache. He's giving a thumbs up, but he's also like in a Spider-Man suit, but also wearing like a nice suit, like a tux over that Spider-Man suit. And that plus the milkshake mustache, plus the look that his eyes are giving with his thumbs up. It's just a bizarre, funny little face.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's funny because like when you break it into shapes, it just looks like nonsense.
Yeah.
You're like, nothing here actually looks like anything. But I get it because it's Spider-Man.
Yeah, right. It's fun. The other one, I just pulled a selection of faces. God. There's a funny cutaway. I think the joke is really actually really good.
Yeah.
Because it's like when Peter is talking to Tony Stark and like, not like, I think it's like comparing like, oh wait, you and Nick Fury have worked together before. Well, you know, you were like sniping at each other. Like I thought that you didn't like each other. And, you know, Tony is like, do you like actually get along with your teammates? And the cutaway is just the entire team arguing with each other. But like they're arguing in the most exaggerated way possible. Like there's literally like braying noises, I think at one point. But they, and they also draw their faces very exaggeratedly. So everybody's face is just fucking absurd. I don't even know how to describe it. Like Peter is like making this like angry. I don't know how to describe it.
It's just stupid.
I don't know how to describe
their faces are just stupid.
Yeah. This is going to be one where you just have to look on the website or on social media at them. I don't know. I genuinely don't know how to describe, like, I don't know what it is about, Ava's face that makes it look so weird, but it looks so weird.
she looks more like Disney princess than she ever looks.
Yeah, yes.
And that paired huge, with like weird arguing and animal noises, but her being like exaggerated, but also sort of like, I don't know, like subdued at the same, like there's just a lot of like dissonance happening on screen when this sequence is going on.
I love that cutaway jag. It's so fucking funny.
So goofy. Yeah, I like that.
God damn, this episode's so frustrating.
It is, because there's plenty to like in here. There's like really good ideas. There's really good like plot moments. There's good character moments. I think they use the big pieces in the foreground really well for the most part, and they use the small pieces in the background, like Iron Fist, really, really well. Or even just Ava at moments in this, I think they use her really well. But yeah, it just undercuts itself. Sometimes through a little bit of like, I'm okay with something sort of accidentally undercutting itself because it didn't go far enough or it wasn't tight enough or whatever. Because that's the thing where I can be like, oh, this just needed tweaking. But the ending is really unforgivable, and it's the last thing you see. So it's just, it's not the majority of the episode. The majority episode is fine, but leaving you with that last impression. We've talked about this. Sometimes when they put like a bow on something that didn't need it, it really like fucks up the whole thing you just watched.
Yeah, because then it's just sort of like, wait, was that the point I was supposed to be getting from all of this?
Right.
Like instead of letting me infer, you know, what you were going for, you know, like it, and it's like, it's one thing. If sometimes the bow is just annoying. It's sort of like, yeah, I already knew. You didn't have to restate that. But it's like really rough when the bow is like, in complete conflict with what the rest of the episode seemed to be saying, but then it only like further highlights the problems with it, like all the stuff where it's just like, Peter, you need to go your own way, and the way he goes his own way is by not going his own way. It's sort of like, it's fucking Peter, like he literally specialized in web design and yet never uses his fucking webbing at all in the Iron Man suit, like even though he says he's using webbing, he just uses repulsors. I don't understand
at all this episode, actually.
No, I don't think so.
That is wild.
It's weird. It's really weird. I don't get it.
It is really weird.
I don't know. A fucking mess of an episode. It's frustrating.
Yeah. I think I just need to move forward, like, knowing in my brain that the majority of the episode is good, actually, and try to forget that the end of it really undercuts and highlights all those problems.
I think so too. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating because I know we're going to see the Iron Spider suit again, and I'm going
to
be even.
I'm not looking forward to it. I could have been, but I'm not going to be.
It's just going to annoy me forever whenever I see it, because it's always going to be like, oh, yeah, you're the thing that fucked up the end of this episode.
Yeah. You're the thing they're forcing in. When you could have just organically brought it back.
I know. Iron Man
makes new suits all the time. You could have just had an episode where there was a Mark II. That literally happens constantly.
I have no issues with Spider-Man and cool new suits. He gets new suits all the time. That's why half the reason the Spider-Man games are so fun is unlocking all the new suits he has.
Honestly, that's like half the reason Spider-Verse is so cool.
Yeah, it's just seeing all the new cool Spider-Man suits. Nobody has any issues with that. Just as long as you don't fucking make the lesson that you don't need a particular suit and then give him the suit at the end of it. Like, then you shouldn't have written this. Silly. If that wasn't where you're going to land, then this episode shouldn't have happened. You know? Like,
damn. Ugh,
God. Whatever. Whatever. I want to be done with this.
We need to end this one.
Please, for the love of God.
well, if you need a palate cleanser, and you can't wait for next week, you can always check out our Patreon, where there are 100+ palate cleansers. That's at patreon.com/wallopingwebsnappers. The vast majority of those additional episodes are available for just $1 a month. And we actually just released our first one of the year and have been talking about what other stuff we want to be dropping this year on Patreon. So new stuff incoming. And also, you know, check out our Discord. There's a link in the show notes. If you feel like we really fell apart here at the end and we're too hard on this, let us know. I don't think we were. You can also find us all over the place online. Derek, where can people find you and the things you're working on?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Derek B. Gale. You can also find my podcast Gimmicks, which looks at the high concept, experimental, structure breaking, gimmicky episodes of television with a new show and a new guest every other Monday. There are new episodes of that out now, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it there. You can also look it up on Twitter and Instagram at Gimmicks Pod. What about you, Doug?
You can find me on Twitter at Ikibooley, IckyBooley. You can also listen to me on a podcast called Novel Gaming, where my friend Katie and I get together to catch up on all the media we've been consuming lately, typically with a focus on books and video games. And if you like Pokemon, I talk about Pokemon over on Victory Road. It's a Pokemon podcast. You can also check out our monthly podcast, Falling with Style, an ongoing Pixar movie marathon. Derek and I watched every Pixar film chronologically. We've watched all of them. We did a marathon or end of marathon retrospective. And we are now just waiting for the next one to come out this summer. So if you want to catch up or do that marathon with us, you've got plenty of time, and you can find Falling with Style wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find it on our website at wallopingwebsnappers.com with a full archive of every Walloping Web Snappers episode, conveniently sorted by series. So if you just want to work your way through a specific Spider-Man series, you can do that, or you can listen in the order that we drop them. You can find that on our website. Follow Walloping Web Snappers on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Walloping Web Pod, or email us at wallopingwebsnapperspodcast@gmail.com. And of course, please rate, review, and subscribe on all podcast platforms, because if you like what we're doing, somebody else will too, and they just haven't found us yet. Those ratings and reviews make us much easier to find. Next week, Spidey and White Tiger team up to fight an evil gym teacher in Why I Hate Gym.
Oh, I think we'll get the answer to why he hates Jim.
Who's Jim?
I don't know. Who is Gaim? What's a Gaim? Oh, a Gaim.
Next week, we talk Kamen Rider Gaim.
I was making a Simpsons reference, and you just took it in a wildly different direction.
See you then.
See ya.